You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. You're listening to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for subscribing on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. Well, this was supposed to have been an episode that aired last week. Last week's theme for the Locked On Podcast Network was to go over the best moments of the 2019-20 season. But to be honest with you, between the NFL draft taking place here in Miami and everything else as far as the Dolphins were concerned, I really thought that much of my fan base was a little preoccupied. The news of the drafting of Tua, I can't pronounce his last name, I'll be honest with you, and I probably should get into that a little bit more. I'm not a football fan for those of you who have remembered that, but I know that it was a big deal. I know it was something that was preoccupying a lot of sports fans here in South Florida, so I decided to not really emphasize putting out the show. I apologize for that. No offense. I really thought that people would be concentrating on the draft more than anything else. And so I didn't worry about putting together the kind of shows that I said I would. I let you down. My apologies for that. But I'm going to move forward. In fact, I'm actually going to go through the best moments of the season and record three straight episodes, airing all three of those episodes in succession, so you'll be able to get all three of those. Make sure you download those. As I mentioned in my honorable mention episode of the best moments of the season, there's no real format for this. This is all very subjective. There were really good moments throughout the season. Obviously, the Miami Heat were one of the best teams in the league. They had some really great starts, a really great start to the season. They had some impressive wins. I'll try to go through all of them. There were special moments even in losses. I didn't get into those. I actually just looked at nine specific games, all of which were victories for Miami. And I'll try to kind of go over them and see exactly why they were so important, why they were a significant moment within the context of the season. So I'll just get right into it. There's, again, no specific order here. Could have done it in kind of a rank of 1 to 9 as far as the biggest game. But again, it's so hard to kind of say exactly what the biggest game of the year was. I mean, there are certainly some pretty fitting candidates, I think. But at the same time, there were so many different moments. And when I was going through this exercise of looking at the best games, it really feels like Miami has had so many different versions of themselves. I mean, there have been some consistencies there, but in reality, the only players that had started almost every game of the season were Myers Leonard and Bam Adebayo. And of course, Myers was hurt towards the end of this season, or at least towards the end of the season following and leading into the hiatus that took place in mid-March. So even with that said, you know, Jimmy was in and out of the lineup on occasion. Tyler Hero was mostly coming off the bench. Kendrick Nunn had his injuries. Duncan Robinson was a pretty steadying force, though. So I guess that maybe I'll have to change that kind of perspective. But as far as the earliest game that I recognize as the most important, one of the most important games of the season, it was really an October 26, 2019 win over the Milwaukee Bucks. And this really feels like that was a lifetime ago. It was the second game of the season, the Milwaukee Bucks home opener. They were without Jimmy Butler. If you recall, Jimmy was off for a paternity leave. He was there for the birth of his daughter. And Deion Waiters and James Johnson were both suspended. Udonis Haslam was sick. And Derrick Jones Jr. had actually gone hurt in mid-game. So it was a very depleted roster against what was one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference the year before and what would wind up being one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference this season as well. So it was just a fantastic game overall. Again, an overtime win. So what did it prove? It showed that Miami could beat powerhouse teams. This was a team with Justice Winslow playing the role that we would see Jimmy Butler play for the most part, where he was the lead playmaker, the guy who was initiating offense. Goran Dragic was coming off the bench. He was phenomenal in that capacity. It was a big game for him. He had accepted the role, and I think that we already saw the beginnings of what were a challenge for him was, you know, coming off the bench, accepting that role, something that Eric Spoelstra has touted numerous times throughout the course of the season. And Goran had 25 points on this occasion. He was 7 of 16 from the floor, a little off from his three-point shooting, 2 of 8 overall. But it was just, I think, again, the beginnings of this was the very best version of Goran coming off the bench. Something that I had been talking about for at least a year or two prior to this actually taking place. I thought this was the evolution of Goran as far as the rest of his career, especially when you add more talent, when you start to worry about the kind of depth Miami has, not just this season, but even last year. And so it seemed like this was a very fitting evolution for him, and he was accepting it and thriving in it. As far as the game itself, again, without Jimmy Butler there, Justice was really in charge. He was taking care of the ball. He was leading the offense, and he had a very phenomenal game. He scored 10 points, also finished with 13 total rebounds and 7 assists, near a triple-double. Now, he was a little off offensively, just shooting 25% from the field. It's something that he had struggled with early on, but I think we started to see a better version of Justice, a little bit more in control, one who was comfortable as the lead ball handler. This was the question. If you go back to that game, he was supposed to take over as the team's point guard. We weren't sure how that was going to work out with Jimmy. We had seen Justice thrive in the preseason, one game in particular against the Orlando Magic, where I believe he had 12 assists. Either way, this was supposed to be the next evolution of Winslow's role in the team, and he was doing pretty well in it. So I think it was a phenomenal opportunity for him, and he seemed to be making the most of it. We weren't sure how he was going to be paired alongside with Jimmy, but we didn't have to worry about it with Butler out of the game. Anyway, so as far as the game, the Heat were down 21, came back to win it. It was the biggest comeback since 2015 for the team. The largest road comeback, ironically enough, since the 27-point comeback in Cleveland during the Heat's 27-game win streak in 2013. They outscored the Bucks by 78-52 from the start of the third quarter. So between the third, fourth, and overtime periods, they outscored the Bucks by 26 total points. So that was how they were able to come back so dramatically. 7 turnovers in the quarter for the Milwaukee Bucks in overtime, and they held Milwaukee to just under 28% shooting during those periods. So that was just incredible performance. It was a number of key signature moments there. The chase down block by Bam Adebayo probably stands out as the highlight of the play. Tyler Hero was booed in just his second game as a professional. He was actually booed because he's from the area, if you recall correctly. He was originally committed to attend the University of Wisconsin and then changed his mind and went to Kentucky instead. And so the Badgers faithful probably were a little upset still with Tyler. He had gone through some pretty substantial criticism because he had changed his mind, et cetera. But I think it's all worked out for him. So strangely enough, the Bucks fans, well, maybe not strangely, but they booed what was supposed to be their hometown hero. But as far as the win and the context of it, what really stands out to me is that they show that they could beat what was one of the better teams in the league the year before and what would wind up being one of the better ones this time. I don't recall any signature moment there other than the block. I don't think they were as effective limiting Giannis Antetokounmpo or shutting down Eric Bledsoe. Antetokounmpo, in fact, finished with 29 points, so he had a phenomenal game. 0-for-5 from three-point range. So again, testing his limits a little bit as far as his shooting range was concerned. But Miami just responded. They were able to absorb it, played some really solid defense, and had some really good contributions from a number of players. Kendrick Nunn with 18 points. Bam Adebayo with 19 points and an overall phenomenal effort from him. 9-of-12, probably one of the career moments as far as shooting 12 free throw attempts in one game. So that was pretty impressive. You know, with Justice in the lineup, without Jimmy Butler, for them to be able to come back so dramatically against a good team like Milwaukee, maybe even a great team, although I think they were still kind of trying to figure themselves out that early in the season. This is why this is one of the better games moments of the season, and just a great effort, great overall team win for them. So coming up next, I'll get into one of the most controversial wins, perhaps, or one that Miami hasn't gotten exact credit for. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Back and going over the 9 best games of the season. It was supposed to be the 9 greatest moments, but there's no way of really pinpointing that. So I just focused on the games themselves. And the next game that I wanted to talk about was the November 3rd, 2019, 129-100 win over the Houston Rockets. That was a signature game for a number of reasons. Pushed Miami's record to 5-1 at that point. So this is, we were just starting to see that maybe this team was something special. They had started off with the first two wins of the season. Then they lost a game to Minnesota. Again, were a depleted roster without Jimmy Butler, and they were wound up getting beat by the Minnesota Timberwolves, who at that point were a pretty decent team. And then, of course, they would fall off completely and wound up losing like 19 of their next 20-something games. So, at that point in time, it wasn't such a bad loss. But either way, Miami was able to bounce back, notch three more wins. And the game against Houston was a challenge. It was the acquisition of Russell Westbrook the summer before, James Harden, still an MVP type player, and how he would pair alongside his friend and former teammate from the Oklahoma City Thunder and Westbrook. Justice Winslow would miss the game due to back tightness. So this was the early misdiagnosis of that injury. If you recall, it was back tightness, and then eventually it was a bone bruise, and they weren't quite sure exactly what it was, but it spelled what would eventually be kind of the beginning of the end for Justice Winslow, unfortunately. It was a fantastic all-around game for Jimmy Butler. He finished with 18 points, 7 rebounds, 9 assists, 4 steals. The Heat shot 44% from three-point range. It was a historic first quarter. Miami actually led the game 46-14. If you recall that game, they were just smacking Houston around completely. The Rockets came into that game totally unprepared, lethargic as hell, no energy whatsoever. And it was the third highest point total per quarter in franchise history. The 32-point difference between the two scores, 46-14, the largest in franchise history. And so when you look at that game, a lot of people kind of dismissed it because they saw the Rockets start off so sluggishly, and they had just assumed that it was the quote-unquote South Beach flu. The Rockets were just 3-2, realistically. They were struggling to find that balance between Westbrook and Harden. I'm not sure how much credence you can lend to it. Players go through these kinds of doldrums all the time. Is Miami a little bit more entertaining than, say, Cleveland or Indiana? Sure, I suppose it's possible. I don't like crediting the South Beach flu too much. I know it's a factor. I just don't know how realistic it is. I think these guys go through these weird schedules all the time. A late flight into Denver, or traveling into Phoenix, or having to go cross country for a road trip, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, all these things happen all the time. You can blame the South Beach flu. Yes, maybe you're staying up at club, live till 3-4 in the morning, and knowing James Harden's proclivities for attending strip clubs, it's very likely that he was at Tootsie's till even later than that. But as far as, whether or not that was responsible for his performance, that's not to say. The reality is that he and Westbrook shot very poorly in combination with Eric Gordon, who is a pseudo guard as far as their three guard lineup. They shot a combined 11 of 35 from the field, 31%. No starter on the Rockets had more than 15 points. And if not for Harden's 14 of 14 free throw attempts, rather, no starter would have had more than 15 points. So he got to the line. He did what he did. But his shooting was abysmal, as was the rest of that starting lineup for the Rockets. As far as the game itself, James Johnson made his debut. If you recall, he had been suspended because of his failure to meet team conditioning standards. Deion Waiters was listed as active but was not on the bench. And this was the beginning of a pattern that we would see often during the next few weeks, where he was supposedly healthy and available, active, but not really available to media. And so it was just a weird period as far as whether or not Miami was counting on playing Deion Waiters anytime soon. We weren't sure what had happened. He had made some comments, obviously, about Eric Spoelstra, and he was detrimental to the team. So, it was just the beginning of the end for both Deion Waiters and James Johnson. And unfortunately, for either player, they weren't really able to bounce back and get into Eric Spoelstra's good graces for a prolonged period of time. But the game itself was just a dominant performance from Miami. Again, whether it's the South Beach flu or just the fact that they were coming together at the right time or figuring out how to play together at a high level, it worked out really well. Myers had one of his best games of the season, 21 points, 9 of 11 overall from the field. So not even really shooting that well from the perimeter as he has done throughout most of the season. But another huge game for Duncan Robinson, too. He finished leading all scorers on the Heat side anyway with 23 points, 7 of 11 from three-point range. So I think that's another factor as far as why this game stands out, is that we just saw Duncan unleashed. We were starting to see signs of it. Obviously, nobody really expected this kind of performance from him We weren't sure that he was going to be a starter, that he was going to be a factor whatsoever. This was a lineup that was probably going to feature Deion Waiters more prominently, that was going to feature James Johnson more prominently, that was going to include Justice Winslow to some degree. With Winslow out, the other two players kind of working their way back into the lineup, no one was really sure how this was going to play out, but Duncan wound up having a huge game, 23 points, and ensconcing himself as a starter and reliable offensive threat. So this was a really good test for Miami, and they dominated completely. Dismiss it if you will, but to me, it was just a signature win on a great season for Miami and showed how good this team could be. And the overall game for Butler, I think you can't dismiss that. The fact that he just wasn't dominant. And we started to see, I think, a version of him that we saw many times throughout the course of the season, where he wasn't necessarily looking to be an aggressive scorer or anything like that. He was picking his spots. He only played 27 minutes, so he was able to keep his time in the game down. I think it was just such a dominant performance. They started off hot. They assisted. Let's see, they had a total of 38 assists on 47 made field goals, right when they're just, this offense was so pass happy, and we started to see the really competent shooting from everybody on this team, and it was just a great start to the season. Another one of those key games early on where you were just thinking to yourself, man, this team is really good. That you could dismiss it if you want to, or that you can blame, you know, nightlife in Miami as one of the factors here, but either way, they beat a solid Houston Rockets team that many people expected to be a title contender, and just a good game, a good overall game. With a depleted roster, they were still able to make the most of it, and just I think it just speaks volumes to the fact that Miami was able to kind of recognize the moment, pounce on a quality opponent there, and were able to take advantage of it for the win. Coming up, Jimmy Butler struggled at the end of regulation, but he would make up for it in this overtime win. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're in iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. This next game probably stands out for a lot of different reasons. It was the December 3rd, 2019 game at Toronto. Miami had improved their record. They were at 14-5 going into Toronto, so clearly already starting to pull away from most of the league as far as their record is concerned, standing out as one of the surprise teams of the season. They had had some losses already, specifically on the road. They lost to the Lakers, the Nuggets, the Wolves game earlier in the season, and they had also followed up with the Sixers and the Rockets. They went back to Houston for the quote-unquote revenge game to make up for that previous beatdown that they had experienced in early November. But as far as traveling to Toronto was concerned, it was just another challenge against the world champions, the team that had won the championship the year before. And it was expected to be a very difficult challenge for Miami. Justice Winslow was back in the lineup. Remember, he had worked his way back from his back injury when we weren't sure exactly what the issue was. And then he had suffered a concussion against Paul Millsap in that Nuggets loss earlier in the season. He butted heads with Millsap. Took a severe shot there where he played the rest of that game, and then later on that night, or I think the following game, they listed him as out for the game because of the concussion symptoms, and he had just taken some time getting back, starting to already to alienate some fans. I think if you go back to early December, people were already starting to say Winslow was brittle, that they weren't sure exactly what was going on with him. That he was just injury plagued, and considering Miami's impressive 14-5 record, a lot of people thought, well, maybe we don't really need Justice anyway. So already I recall getting a number of mailbag questions where people were wondering whether or not we should even have Winslow on the team, whether or not it was just a waste of a roster spot, whether or not we could trade him now and get something in value. Of course, Winslow would wind up being traded away later on in the season. But as far as going into Toronto, a good challenge against a really good team. Now, on the Raptors side of things, Kyle Lowry was returning to action after nursing a fractured thumb injury. He had kept, he had been out a number of games there. And so he struggled mightily on this December night against the Heat. He would wind up shooting just 2 of 18 overall. Again, partly why this game was dismissed somewhat. I mean, look. looking back at these signature games, these big moments, no situation is perfect. No win-win. You take the win however you can get it. Teams are going to go through injuries. Teams are going to go through anything. You can excuse it as much as you want to, but the reality is that you have to learn how to take advantage of these. And even without Kyle Lowry at 100%, let's be honest, the Toronto Raptors are a very good team. They have a lot of depth there. They started to get some really good performances from OG Anunoby, from Fred VanVleet, from a number of their players. Pascal Siakam was at this point almost an MVP-type candidate. And I think we started to see shades of how good this defense could be because Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, even Justice to some point at some points was just their perimeter defense and their ability to shut down Siakam and limit what he did was just phenomenal. They held Pascal Siakam to 15 points and 5 of 14 shooting. He got to the line 6 times, but a guy who was starting to garner MVP buzz earlier in the season was just a non-factor for the most part. And they really struggled pretty mightily there. So a really, really solid game for Miami overall. Why I included this one, just aside from the fact that it was a win against a quality opponent, is that you remember Jimmy had struggled in this game. He was, he had taken an ill-advised three-pointer in regulation. That he had blown a 7-point lead, and the Raptors went on an 8-0 run towards the end of the game to take the lead. Butler had tied it up, but he had actually split 2 free throws. He could have had a chance to win the game and then missed a free throw. Siakam turned the ball over in the other end, and then Butler kind of rushed a 3-pointer at the buzzer, rimmed out. It was a bad shot. He probably could have taken a better... He probably could have settled down a little bit, taken a better look. Unfortunately, he missed the 3-point shot. So I think there was some buzz, if you recall correctly, some people starting to wonder already whether or not it was a, you know, is he really clutch? Is Jimmy, the reputation of Jimmy Butler as a clutch player, maybe unwarranted? You know, he would wind up performing pretty well on other occasions throughout the night. But more importantly, in this game itself, despite the missed free throw, despite the missed 3-pointer, overtime started and he was just on fire. 8 straight points, a steal, a turnover, a 3-pointer where he was leaning in there expecting a foul. A phenomenal performance. Just punched Toronto right in the face to start off that overtime period, and the Raptors never quite recovered. It was just a phenomenal performance from him to kind of just, like, I think you start to see how good Butler can be when he's challenged like this. Like, I think he understood. He probably, I won't say blow, he didn't blow the game necessarily, but he didn't really take advantage of the opportunities, things that he's done in the past. He probably took the pressure and felt it, and I think he was able to challenge himself and wound up coming through in a spectacular way in this overtime game. So it was just a phenomenal total team effort. Multiple players with double-digit scoring. Goran Dragic had missed that game, so Miami was challenged themselves. As much as you want to blame or put the focus on Kyle Lowry coming returning back from injury, the reality is Miami was going through their own issues, not to mention Justice Winslow coming back from the game. If I recall correctly, there was one particular moment there where Fred VanVleet had the ball on the wing, and it looks like shades of the flying death machine from the old Miami Heat, a big three era where their defense, which is so phenomenal, they would just have these number of players kind of hedge on the screen and trap a player, and it was just VanVleet had no response for this big body. Remember, we started to see Winslow, or we had high hopes that Winslow become this perimeter defender and would fit alongside Jimmy Butler and Adebayo and form this trio of great defensive players. And for one night, at least, we would see it. Winslow wouldn't play again for the rest of the season. He would have just one game aside from this one. I'm sorry, he would play in just 2 more games after this one. The next night, in a back-to-back set, they would go on to Boston, a loss. But over a month later, he would play against the Pacers. And that's a game that's significant for a number of reasons, but that would wind up being Winslow's last game of the season. So only 2 more games aside from this one in Toronto for Justice Winslow as far as his tenure in Miami. And still a good sign of how good this team could be. I mean, offensively, a very balanced approach with Jimmy Butler providing the kind of star clutch performance that you expect from a guy like him. And for Winslow, he also had 17 points on 8 of 17 shooting. Olynyk had a big game, 16 points on 6 of 12 shooting. So just a really good, solid overall effort. And another opportunity to beat one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. And so when you're looking at why this is a win that stands out. There are many, many different factors. Aside from the overtime thrill of Jimmy Butler coming through, Justice Winslow providing some high-level defense and giving a glimpse of what this team is capable of. I just thought it was just a phenomenal overall effort, and so that's why it's on this list. I'll get into the next other games over the next couple of episodes. You should be having those available for download, so please continue to listen to those. If you have any points or anything like that that you think I should include in upcoming shows, please feel free to send those out. Again, my apologies for not getting these shows out last week, but thank you so much for listening. Thank you, as always, for your support. You can always reach out to me via Twitter at LockedOnHeat or at email at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. This is David Romero signing off and thanking you for your support.
Yeah! Crack it up, D.